It is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal, a time where we welcome in Cynthia, who is already in the middle studio. Let me just pot it up here so we can hear her.
Hi. Oh,
good morning. How are you?
Cold.
I know. It's cold and blustery out. Yeah. And on the telephone, nice and warm, ensconced in Warmville, is Janet Manco.
Good morning. Yes, Warmville. I don't know if any place is Warmville right now this morning, but, you know, it's January.
That's exactly right. It's January, and what would we think would happen in January?
Yeah.
All right. Well, and we'll see if Ann shows up.
Door just opened.
Wow, the door just opened? And that means if the door closes, it's Ann.
Door closed. Ann. Door opened and closed. Other door opening and closing. It's Ann.
She's here. All right. So now let's go to the paper right off the bat. And lots of color on the front page, but we'll start off with a large story by Cynthia, Journalism Matters, and it's fun.
So we had wanted at the beginning of the year to do an interview with some of the local journalists, of whom there are so many around here, just about why journalism matters in this time when there have been a lot of attacks on journalists, and of course we have a president who's always talking about fake news, and when more and more people are going to really sketchy sites to get their news. And it was just a little too much to try and track everybody down, but there was a very moving story last summer on NBC's Weekend Today with Willie Geist. And my friend Dick Gottlieb had called me and kind of said, make sure you're watching TV this Sunday. And I was like, okay. And it was an essay written by Harry Smith about why small-town journalism still matters. And they featured a cover of the Lakeville Journal and the Millerton News. And it turned out that it was Dick Gottlieb's daughter, Caroline, who grew up right across the street on the green here in Sharon, who was the producer on that story. So I got hold of her. She was up here visiting her parents over Christmas. And we talked about, you know, her career as a producer for first for CNN and then for NBC. And she's had a great time. She's done incredible stories. She was in South Korea for a month for the Olympics. She's, you know, she gets to travel around the country with Harry Smith and just go do cool stuff, and has had a really interesting, satisfying career, compelling and exciting, and loves it. And so we just talked to her about how she ended up doing what she's doing, what her job involves. And you know, as a person who's living in the big city doing big-time journalism now, like why we should still care about covering news stories from little town meetings to, you know, the president.
Well, what people don't understand, and Janet, you can chime in here, and Jill and I talk about this all the time. If you're in small market journalism, whether it's broadcasting, whether it's print journalism, you're not in it to make $1 million because it doesn't happen.
I'm in it to make $1 million.
Me,
I mean,
too.
No, basically, you're in it to provide a service and to hope you can break even and pay your bills.
Yes. That's it. And you feel fortunate if you can just do that because, you know, we're in it because we believe that it's important in our communities for people to understand what's going on with their governments.
If you don't have it,
in general.
If you don't have it, you are so ill-prepared for just functioning. It's hilarious.
I mean, people have to realize that, and that's why it's so important. You have papers like the Lakeville Journal, and I'll say for and radio stations like us and like WSBS, which serves Great Barrington,
right?
Because you need that local information, and that's the basis of your life going forward every day.
Yeah, and it's really true that if we weren't here doing this, and I use, you know, the we, all of us who do this in these little regions, that nobody would, you know, the bigger markets aren't really coming into our smaller markets to cover anything unless something monumental happens.
And not to mention the fact that while the cat's away, the mice will play. You think there are scandals big time.
Exactly.
Well, just leave everybody, you know,
let the shadow fall.
Yeah. That's right. And there are many instances where our reporters are the only ones that do these meetings, you know, and sometimes your camera and sometimes not. And we, you know, try to do the best we can, all of us, to do this. But you're right. It's the oversight and keeping an eye on what your government is doing.
Meanwhile, Anne has started a one-woman campaign to get all of our friends who don't subscribe to buy subscriptions.
That's right, and I'd like to tell all of my friends right now, don't even talk to me until you subscribe to the Lakeville Journal.
And while you're at it, since you are such a great donor, can you just also encourage them?
And I was about to say, it doesn't cost any money. You know, it's not a lot of money to donate to WHGD and get a subscription to Lakeville Journal, and it's important for everybody.
And I'll say the Millerton News as well.
Absolutely.
If you're on the New York side.
Yes,
absolutely.
And the Millerton News, of course.
No, it really and truly is. You could buy a pack of cigarettes.
Right. Exactly.
Well, there's lots of color on the front page. The Hoosie girls are undefeated. Nice picture there. We can get to that in the sports pages.
Well, actually, so let me say, Tom Brown took these photos. So Ann McNeil does these great little write-ups because it's very hard to track down all the coaches. But, of course, they all have to report to her what the scores are because she's the athletic director at the high school. So she does these nice write-ups for us where she summarizes all the different sports. So the write-up that we have had been written before
they lost.
Before this team photo was taken and before they lost. Right. So they were doing great. They were undefeated at that moment. And Ann will have an update for us in the issue of January 17th.
All right, speaking about undefeated, there is our good buddy Bob Green talking about his Survive the Drive winter drives and more.
So, you know, I hate to keep harping on this, but we had a lot of fatalities, auto fatalities last year. It really an unusually high, especially tragic number. And, of course, winter is here now. Those were all between May and December. And this, of course, is the worst driving time of the year. And Colin Chambers, who's one of the owners of the Falls Village Inn, is now doing some work with Lime Rock Park and Skip Barber Driving School. And he called us and said, hey, we're doing winter driving schools. And we'd love to have, you know, one of your reporters come because we really feel like people in this area need to know. And they actually offered a scholarship, a driving scholarship to Housatonic Valley Regional High School to one student, an annual thing. So we think that's great. And we're hoping that whoever that student is, that they'll share what they learn with the other kids. But so Lance Christensen, who is our photographer, who lives down in Kent, and is just a really interesting, smart guy and also a great driver, we sent him down there to take the class, and he does a really good job of conveying some of the most important points that Bob makes. One of the things that Bob always says that I always remember is, you know, never text while you're driving, never use the phone while you're driving, because and never change a CD. Like, we don't really use CDs anymore, but, you know, don't play with your Spotify, because it only takes about 3 seconds to go from being fine to being in a crash. And what one of the things that Lon's pulled out was braking, and he said, you know, when you start to feel like you're losing control, brake as hard as you can. Just put your whole body weight on that brake and just hold onto that steering wheel and keep going straight. So there are a lot of good tips in here and also information on this class, which is expensive but valuable.
All right. I forget the name of the movie, which is one of my favorite movies. It stars Albert Brooks, and it's how it starts, how he goes to heaven, to the way station before going to heaven.
Oh, yeah.
He has a Barbara Streisand CD and a new BMW he bought, and he leans down to pick it up, and, of course,
boom.
He gets hit by,
that's
a,
it.
By
yeah.
a bus.
And
so
he meets Meryl Streep.
Streisand.
Of course, yeah. And then he meets Meryl Streep in heaven.
I love that movie.
Defending Your Life. It's what a great movie, really, yeah. What it was.
It's so charming.
All right. We will go on to page 2. And, Janet, I have to talk to you about this for a second, because it's something that affects people that run newspapers. And I was explaining to Cynthia before she got before we went on air, somebody actually took two of our interviews this past political season, a radio station, and aired them, clipping out all our parts and just putting in the answers. And I inadvertently found out about it by actually listening to that radio station one morning. And it was complete plagiarism, taking two interviews and acting as if they were on. You've got an apology there on a breach of trust that happened to you at the Lakeville Journal.
That's right. And, you know, hearing your story, Marshall, weren't you stunned to hear that?
At first, I heard the first two things, and I said, this sounds familiar. And then as it went on, I went, oh, my God. But then they made the mistake of actually leaving a clip of somebody's voice in from the station.
Yeah.
And I literally stopped the car. I was so dumbfounded.
He called me right afterwards. It was, do you know what just happened?
Yeah.
And it was also a complete accident, meaning to hear.
Yeah,
to hear it. That's
was,
right.
You know. The chances were
astronomical. Yeah. So here we are just as stunned this week. We come on the radio every week and we talk about the news, whether it's good or bad. For us, this is one of the most painful stories we've had to talk about. It's an apology for a breach of trust. It's on page A2 at the top in both the Lakeville Journal and the Millerton News, because it's a story that ran in Compass on January 3rd. And Leon Graham's review of Roma in the Compass issue, it was brought to our attention by longtime readers, and for that we are grateful that there were many similarities in that review that Leon wrote to a review by Anthony Lane in The New Yorker, which published on December 17th, 2018. You know, after I got that email, I thought, well, you know, I'll have to check this and see, and pulling out both of them, it is obvious that the passages, there were six places in a short review that Leon Graham did that were just the same as Anthony Lane's review. So he acknowledged that he plagiarized Lane's work and that he took passages directly from the review. This is one of the two worst things any journalist can do. The other is fabricating, just stealing another person's work. So we have placed Leon Graham on indefinite leave, and we are conducting further investigation into his past work, and we're looking at different programs we can use to scan through the past 3 years of his work. And, you know, we will keep our readers informed of anything we find. You know, our goal is always to serve our readers ethically and well, and we are deeply disturbed by this, and we'll take steps to improve our system of oversight. We apologize to our readers, to The New Yorker, to Anthony Lane. I've already done that. You know, directly called The New Yorker, let them know what happened, and to Anthony Lane as well. It's something we can't understand, and we only apologize to our readers.
All right, so we will move on. But it was very, very well done. I mean, as we were talking, as a curator of people who bring local news and information, the last thing we need is the people to lose trust in anything that we do.
That's right.
In any form of it.
Absolutely last right. thing.
It goes to the heart of what we do, yes. And all we will do now is try to regain our readers' trust.
All right, we will move on. Ralph Nader has a brand new book of Congress, Rats, and Reforms.
I know, it's fiction, but yeah. Is it fiction?
I don't know.
Yeah, so Ralph Nader, who started the American Tort Museum, which is supposed to be super fun, and I haven't gone there. I guess I have to go there. But so he's written a new book, and it's it's kind of what you expect from Ralph Nader. It's very critical. It's something he's had around. It's not like he just whipped it out in the last 2 years, but a new book. And, he's always been a great friend to our papers and very supportive of us, which we appreciate. And so he made himself available to Shaw Isaacson, our reporter, and they had a nice interview.
All right, uncovering a lost corner of Salisbury history once again.
Yeah, the fascinating Peter McCarron, a Salisbury School music teacher, but also just generally an interesting guy. And he and his wife Danielle Mailer had bought a house on Farnham Road that used to belong to our pressman, Ray Folks, who is a very respected longtime resident. And he left, it sometimes happens, the family left a box of photos. And Danielle and Peter started going through it, and they were like, wow, this is a whole different part of Salisbury than you kind of knew existed. And so Peter started doing research into it and started a project with his students at Salisbury School as a history project. And he's been sort of reporting to the Lakefield Journal and seeking help on old photographs with identifying people. It's been a very interesting process that we've been enjoying being part of. And he did a talk last weekend in Salisbury, and it was standing room only. So I think that's really nifty, and Patrick does a nice job of summarizing it, but I'm sure that we will also have more as time goes on.
All right, Shaw's story on a church mission.
Yeah, Winchester Center. The pastor's feeling was, let's not just have church be about coming to service on Sunday. Let's really reach out into the community and do good works. So they've got a program called Doing Sundays, and they collect food for food banks and diapers for diaper banks and just generally sort of reach out in the community and, in the way that churches sort of have a sense of what the need is at any given moment, really try to fill that need.
All right. I want to go on to a story out of Cornwall, which is an amazing, interesting story that we'll have ramifications really throughout the region, and that is the debate between affordable housing and open space in towns.
I'm so glad you said that, because this really is one of the most interesting stories for every town that you live in. And it's hard to figure out what the headline is to say to make people realize like they should really read this. But you have two very smart, groups in Cornwall. They're both equally passionate about the two sides of this debate that impacts every single town in the region. And the question is, there's a parcel that's available for conservation. They're looking at it, and the price that is being set for the town to buy that land and to conserve it. And that's an interesting thing, because one of the somebody in town had said at the meeting last month, that they're charging you that, very high price for that land based on the concept that there's X number of building lots and that you could build X number of houses. But if you're just buying it to never build anything on it, should that selling price still be the same? Which is a very legitimate, interesting question. And then the second question is, we all, you know, this is a moment when we sort of feel like affordable housing is important, and, you know, people feel that the best way to address that is to build more smaller, more affordable parcels, and should some land be set aside, you know, as sometimes happens when you put something in easement where you can actually say, let's build three affordable houses and always keep them affordable. So it's a fascinating debate, and I think it's going to go on for a while.
Well, also, I was just at the Sharon Town meeting because we talked about the lease, and this is going on in Sharon where there's a certain amount of acreage that wants to be put aside for that. And it was brought up that maybe a certain, by somebody in the audience, well, you know what, maybe a couple acres of that could be also pushed off for housing. Right. You know, because there's a delicate balance that needs to be reached in each and every one of these towns between open space and affordable housing, not low income housing, but affordable housing. So right. Normal people, firefighters and EMS people can live and work in our town.
And farmers, you know, actually one of the, in the vanguard on this was the property on Salmon Kill Road where Whippoorwill Farm is now. So that is all in conservation. An enormous chunk of that road is in conservation. But Malcolm McLaren and his wife put that into conservation. They set aside a parcel specifically for a farmer to live in, and that's where the Cockerlines live and how they're able to run Whippoorwill Farm, which has been a great benefit to all of us.
All right, you've got a story by Shaw at the start of the General Assembly. Maria Horn goes to Hartford and starts work.
Yeah.
We've been very lucky. We have not had part-time representation in Hartford. Roberta Willis and Brian Oler have given us almost full-time representation.
Right.
And Maria Horn pledges to continue and be more like a full-time legislator than a part-time legislator.
Yes, and it's been really fun getting her updates. She's very excited about it. She's posting great photos of herself on Instagram of her and her family on her first day. So this particular article is Shaw talking to Jay Case, who is the rep for the Winsted area. And Patrick will talk to Maria Horn and Craig Miner for next week's paper as Maria is sworn in yesterday, I guess, and is already, I think, vice chairman of appropriations and on environment and some other committees. We're looking forward to some great work from her.
All right. As we move on here, I want to move on.
I just want to quickly say property transfers, which, you know, they're a huge, it's huge to type up and collect the property transfers. So we don't do them, you know, frequently. We sort of gang them up and do them in one big chunk. But this is a slow news time of year. But we know that people really like to read these property transfers. It's a very interesting look at the area. And, of course, at a time when we're all concerned about affordable housing, you know, housing prices have dropped. And it's a good time for you to kind of see, like, oh, I could purchase that. You know, I can afford that. And, of course, our Tri-Corner Real Estate is a good way to look at that, too. But we have two full pages of property transfers, and we'll have a couple more next week, I believe.
All right, test-taking and vaping, hand-in-hand.
Yeah. Well, you know, but this is interesting. So Ian Strever, the new principal, who's so great, was talking at the board meeting about the PSAT. And, you know, in its life, Hoosie has not always been a college prep high school. It's had a certain percentage of kids who've gone to college, but it's always been like, well, you know, a lot of our kids are going to go into careers. Some of our kids aren't going to go to college. So I wouldn't say in my lifetime of reading about and of covering Region 1 that the PSAT and preparation for the PSAT has been heavily emphasized. And so Ian was talking a lot about having kids taking the PSAT and learning, you know, with the Kaplan test and these other expensive, you know, educational services that not all kids can afford. What they're teaching is how to game the test, because there's a way you take it, and certain things that you learn about, you know, how you pace yourself and what you do when you aren't quite sure about the answer. And so what they're talking about is preparing Hoosie kids to score higher on their SATs by having them take the PSAT. So that's very interesting. This vaping thing is a huge big deal, and they're also going to be talking about it at the Kent Board of Ed. I think that was this week. It might be next week. I think that all of the regional, the boards in the region are going to be talking about vaping. But we have a health story that we actually held this week that's going to run next week, where at the end of December, an organization that's part of the National Institutes for Health did a study, and they said the increase in vaping among American youth is off the charts. They've never seen an increase in an addictive activity like vaping. And they noted that most kids don't realize that there is nicotine, even if, like, all kids seem to think that, you know, that there are certain kinds of vaping that's just a scent or a flavor, and that there is no such thing. So very interesting, very concerning, and do look out for that health story next week.
All right, we only have about 3.5 minutes left, so I want to get on to the editorial section, and then we'll get on to Ann, because she trekked in here on this cold morning. We'll start off with you, though, Janet, on the editorial.
Yeah, we're looking to keep the momentum going on the transfer station. The extra $1 million approximately to was approved by the two towns. Do read the editorial to look at what might still delay this project and how important we believe it is to get it going. We have lots of letters, too, and don't miss the cartoon or the column.
Absolutely. Now, we will go on to Compass. A very bright one-page thing. Anne, it's all yours.
Yes, we have Francis Fitzgerald speaking on Sunday at the Hotchkiss Library in Sharon. She's a Pulitzer Prize-winning author. She wrote probably the definitive book on the Vietnam War called Fire in the Lake. But this time she spent really, I don't know exactly how many years, but close to, she's been working on it really since the 80s. writing about evangelicals in America, and she's written a very thorough history of the evangelicals in America. But rather than talk about that this week, she's going to just talk about the evangelicals in the age of Trump. So sort of the way the evangelicals have evolved. And one of the things that I found interesting when I spoke with her is that evangelicals are always lumped by us non-evangelicals into one big lump of people, but they're very different. There are all kinds of evangelicals. Some of them support Trump, some of them don't, some of them are anti-abortion, some of them are pro-choice. I mean, there's really, there are a lot of shades within this group, and she will discuss that on Sunday. And it's really going to be interesting, and I think you have to reserve, so call them today if you want to go. Then we have a wonderful movie review by Patrick Sullivan about Clint Eastwood's movie, The Mule. And you just have to read it. It says, Clint plays Clint like no one else can, which is a headline I wrote. But really, Patrick writes Patrick like no one else can. So you just have to read it. He's such a good writer, and it's such a funny review.
I love what he did with it by saying, you know, is it a great movie? No, but is it a pretty good movie? If you like Clint Eastwood, you're going to love the movie.
And he keeps saying it's a Clinty movie.
Yeah, I mean, if you like Clint Eastwood, he has made great movies, but he also makes Clint Eastwood movies where it's strictly for his fans, and his fans love it. You know, they eat it up. And
I just have to read one sentence. He says, since it's a Clinty movie, that also means some action, period, such as Dead Body in Trunk, Fun at the Skeet Shooting Range, Mean-Looking Guys in Garages, Girls Gone Wild-style party scene. Anyway, he goes on from there.
All right.
And then one other thing just to mention, which is in calendar, is that there's a on Saturday at 3 at the Cornwall Library, there'll be a short film about Bob Parker, who is the great artist of Cornwall, well, of the world, but Robert Andrew Parker, who's 91, and he has macular degeneration, and he's painting every day. And this film is funded by the Vision and Art Project and the American Macular Degeneration Foundation, and they've produced it. So I think it'll be interesting. It's about his career, but also about how he's still painting.
And Bob has a show that he recorded over 400 shows in about 3.5 years, a 2-hour show, Swing That Music, about old-time jazz. He's just a legend.
And the music is done by his son, the score for the film.
Amazing. He's an amazing man. Amazing.
He is. He's the greatest. So I'm going to the movie, and everybody should.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap up this week in the Lakeville Journal. We'll speak to you all next week.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. You can find the Lakeville Journal, of course, online, tricornernews.com, and you can also find them on Facebook as well.